Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35,000ths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Here we go again.
All right. We're back. And hopefully yesterday we had a bunch of technical difficulties. So I even deleted. I usually don't delete podcasts, but I deleted that one. So we're back today. We have Darlene Lewis who will be speaking momentarily. Today's podcast is titled, it's sort of like a reframe of yesterday, so hopefully we can have zero technical difficulties today. Today's podcast is titled Air Mattress Billionaires, Reparations, and Squatters. 619-768-2945 is the number. Now, this, I think this will be a very interesting podcast for people. More than usual. Anyway, let's play the first audio.
There's a lot of this going on in Detroit these days. Now that the city is out of bankruptcy, it's tearing down scores of vacant houses in deteriorating neighborhoods.
Hello? Hello?
The kinds of places that have provided Michelle McCray with a roof over her head.
This place was like home.
McCray is long-term unemployed and has been homeless off and on for a good portion of her adult life. The 58-year-old looks for recently vacated houses that she can live in for an extended period. Like this one, where McCray stayed for 3 summers.
It was fixed up, the floors were clean, the walls were clean, there wasn't trash everywhere, none of that stuff.
Some Detroiters think it's better to have squatters like McCray in houses they are taking care of, rather than leaving the houses empty and vulnerable to scrappers, drug peddlers, and the like.
When the people saw in the neighborhood that we were actually living here, keeping the place clean, and wasn't a lot of traffic, they didn't bother us. They were like, yeah, we'd rather for them to stay there than somebody to come over here acting stupid.
Others don't have such a favorable opinion of squatting.
I believe it's become an epidemic in Detroit.
Letitia Johnson wants abandoned homes in her East English Village neighborhood to be lived in, just not by squatters.
That person is not responsible for it. So I don't personally believe there is a such thing as a good squatter.
The city's land bank authority has been auctioning off homes that can be rehabilitated and demolishing those that can't. A survey completed last year on every property in Detroit found more than 40,000 structures needed to be torn down. Nearly the same number had indications of blight and could be up for demolition. Contractors say they find squatters in less than 10% of the houses scheduled to be taken down. But the land bank won't raise or sell properties that are known to be occupied, meaning squatters are slowing efforts to combat blight. McCray says she and her fellow squatters don't want to hold up progress. They're simply trying to survive.
Because we don't have a place to stay. We're not trying to do anything to anybody.
Abandoned homes and squatting. Two problems Detroit hopes to see come down sooner rather than later. Mike Householder, Associated Press, Detroit.
Imagine footing the water bill for the people that squatted in the home before you moved in. It is a reality for a Detroit couple stuck now with that outrageous utility bill.
And frustrated with the situation, they turned to our Ronnie Dahl for help.
A Detroit couple bought this house not knowing squatters were inside. They had them evicted and thought their troubles were over. But then they learned the squatters had been stealing water for years, and they got stuck with the bill.
Going down there, talking to people, getting a run around.
Ken and Lori Gray's ordeal with the Detroit Water and Sewage Department started last fall. They purchased this home in the Wayne County auction. While they were waiting for squatters to be evicted, they checked with the water department regarding service. That's when Ken says he was told,
there's no sign of water usage at the property. So I said, yeah, there's water usage because he waters his grass every day, you know. And she said, no, there's no water uses.
Ken had retired from the water department and knew he was dealing with an illegal hookup, so he reached out to a former coworker.
He brought the key and cut the water off, you know, and we thought, okay, good, you know, it's done now.
Only it wasn't. Days later, someone had turned the water back on illegally, so a backhoe was brought in to break the water line. Ken and Lori thought that was the end of things until April, when the shutoff notice arrived.
$3,300. Yeah, $3,300. And then I told them, I said, this is outrageous.
Someone from the water department had finally come out to read the meter. Even though the squatters were gone, Ken and Lori got hit with the bill for their previous water usage, going back to 2009. Ken thinks the bill should have gone to the squatter. He had his name and his new address, so I stopped by, but no one was home. Last week, I contacted the Detroit Water and Sewage Department regarding Lori and Ken's ordeal. Tuesday, this came in the mail.
We got a letter from DWSD telling us, basically, the mistake was on them. I'm going to tell you, Ronnie, if you hadn't got involved, Jesus would have came back before this bill would have got resolved.
I'm not done with those responsible for running up the bill, the accused water thieves, and neither is the water department. They are still investigating. On Detroit's east side, Ronnie Dahl, 7 Action News.
Now, this happened on Detroit's west side, and police are calling this a home invasion. But some people are seeing it a little differently. The victim did not want to talk on camera, but a few family members of the suspects did. Last night, the lady of this house came home to one hell of a surprise. There was one heck of a party in her pad, but she never got the invite. Three men had helped themselves to all of her gin and her Seagram's Happy Juice. And these cats went crazy. They cooked up all her food, crab legs, shrimp. They even had a bird in the oven. Can you believe it? And while they were fixing their feast, they were high as a kite on the chronic. Bold, huh? She screamed.
And they ran out the house.
Then the lady called the law. According to the police report, the victim says her house was a hot mess. A bunch of her stuff was stolen, including some very sentimental things. And the dudes dining at her dining room table were fellas with familiar faces. She told detectives two of them live right next door. Now that's worse than a nosy neighbor.
Your brothers were in there.
Yeah, one of them.
But sis here says it's not his fault. He was just a guest.
Somebody was squatting in that house. The guy that was in there, he was squatting already, so he was inviting people over as if he was living there.
If you're a homeowner, renting a property or whatever, you don't leave your home abandoned for 3-4 months.
Well, the woman tells Fox 2, she was there last Tuesday, and everything was intact.
This is Detroit, Michigan. This is the hungry capital of the world, and we will come in there and squat in your house if you're not home.
It was like a chill spot.
Wait, what?
I mean, this is, if you squat in the house and somebody invites you over to smoke some weed, you're going to go be right next door.
I don't know what you think about all this right now, but these people believe she's to blame, and she should have known better than to ever, ever leave her house alone for too long.
Stay on your property for your copper come up missing.
Now, that gentleman says he would never, ever do anything like that, but other people do. Two guys were arrested last night, but the other guy, he ran before the police got there. You know, the saddest thing about all this is you should be able to leave your house as long as you want to, and everybody should just leave it alone. By the way, that lady is looking for another place to live. I'm Andrea Isom on The Edge.
Now, today's podcast is titled Air Mattress Billionaires, Reparations, and Squatters, 619-768-2945. Plus, we have a special guest, Darlene Lewis. Which we'll bring on after these audios finish. But we're playing these squatter things where people have an entitlement attitude, I guess, see a property that they feel they can occupy and live in with no consequences. Let's play this next one. And I'm laying these audios down. You'll see where I'm going in a minute. This one is really outrageous.
She may not be Goldilocks, but a woman makes herself right at home in a property that doesn't belong to her.
Now, the homeowner wants this woman out of her house, but she's having a tough time giving the squatter the boot. Fox News' Taryn Asher live in Detroit with more on the intruder who just will not leave, Taryn.
Yeah, and you know what? She just came home right now, but we've been waiting to speak with her all night because the homeowner says that she unlawfully walked into the house, took ownership of this house, and has been living there and refuses to leave. She just pulled up right now, and before we get to our full story, ma'am, what do you have to say about that? Are you a squatter?
No, I'm not.
Why are you not a squatter?
I would like to park my vehicle if you don't mind.
Well, we would like to know because this woman says you moved in and you won't leave and she owns this house.
I'll show you my credentials, why I'm here.
She says that you said this was part of a program.
I have, yes, I have a construction lien for the repairs that I put into the house. Someone had broke into the house on July the 4th, and they stripped through the radiators, and I made a report.
But she said that you broke into this house, and you have been living here because you said that you have the right to live here.
I've been released with her since October 9th, 2012. And then in February 2011, we had to vacate because the boiler was damaged. The only thing I took, I own Little Egypt Publishing Company. I took all my books and my writings.
All right, well,
but my furnitures were still left in here.
One more thing. She also said that you said that this was part of a program, that you felt that anybody who can go into Detroit, take over an abandoned house, and live there.
Well, I'm an advocate for affordable housing. That's a part of my campaign as a U.S. write-in.
Did you say that to her, and do you believe that?
Well, I believe that since I met her. The first time I met her when I was running for state senate, 2010, and she was also running for political office. That was a part of my belief. I signed an oath pledging that I would fight for affordable homes.
All right, well, ma'am, maybe we can talk to you about this a little bit more in a moment. There's a lot to this story. Take a look what the homeowner had to say about this.
You can't get any houses like this anywhere in America, especially for this price.
Heidi Peterson always dreamed of living in an historical home. In May of 2010, she bought this one in Detroit's Boston Edison District for $23,000. After being away for a year, she returned home last week and realized she got way more than she bargained for.
I told her it was my house.
She says a woman was living in her house, the one who put her pictures on the mantle. Heidi learned from neighbors she'd been living there for a few months. Heidi claims the squatter changed the locks, reworked the plumbing, replaced her appliances, put a lien on the house, and even changed the curtains. And now this squatter won't leave.
She locked the door, so.
So now they are forced to sleep one room away from each other. Heidi with her one-year-old daughter.
People would find this odd that you're living with a squatter.
That's something that happens in Detroit.
An unusual situation, and as we discovered, not your average squatter. Her name documented all over the house, Missionary Tracy Elaine Blair, a write-in candidate for president.
Do you feel safe?
I don't know. I don't know what the capabilities are. We're afraid of her mindset of entitlement.
A squatter doesn't have a legal right to the property, but under the law, the homeowner cannot remove a squatter by force. In most cases, the homeowner has to file a civil action in court, prove it's their property, and evict the squatter. That's what Heidi is trying to do.
She thinks that this is a program in Detroit to take people's homes and fix them up, and then she gets to keep them.
Because Heidi spent all of her money on this house, she says she can't afford to go anywhere else. And until she can legally kick the woman out, they are forced to live under the same roof.
I thought, if the house is not safe, how can I come here with my child? There's an issue with that. But should I lose my house to a squatter because I don't have rights to my property, or should I fight to get it back?
And Heidi also claims that things have come up missing in her house, that it's certainly not the way that she left it. But, of course, you heard the woman, the supposed squatter here, and she claims that there was a lease. Heidi said there was not. We have not been able to see that, but she also says that she has the right to be able to live here if she fixes up the home. So there is clearly a lot to the story, and this is a perfect example why police don't go in when they're called and just remove someone from the house, because they don't have that proof on who actually lives in the house. And that's why, like in this case, the woman has to go to court, get an order of eviction, and show prove that she owns the house, and then evict the woman that lives there. That's why there is a legal process, and it would take 30 days to get her out. So clearly there is a lot to this story. We would like to take a look at that lease, and we plan to after we send it back to you.
All right, Taryn, so we know why the police won't get involved in this kind of thing. What about attorneys? I got to believe it's very difficult for either one of them to get an attorney because they're cash-strapped in the first place, which is why they're living under the same roof.
Well, yes, Heidi told us that she can't afford an attorney. She put everything into this house, and right now she can't even afford to move anywhere, let alone pay for legal fees. But she says she needs one because there's no reason why there should be a lien against the property. In fact, that lien is in that woman's name, the supposed squatter here. So a lot of this stuff happening while she was gone. She said when she returned home, you know, there was a lot of changes to this house, stuff that she did not approve. So it sounds like it's going to be quite a legal battle, and you're right. She wishes she could afford an attorney right now. Back to you.
All right, Taryn Asher reporting to us live from Detroit.
There's a lot of this going on in Detroit these days. Now that the city is out.
Okay, we already played that one. There was one more. I think this could be it.
Now, this happened on Detroit's west side, and police...
No, we played that one. Ooh, there was one. Okay. All right, today's podcast is titled Air Mattress Billionaires, Reparations, and Squatters. Now, we played a series of audio on squatters. A squatter, for those who don't know and who couldn't pick it up in the audios we played, squatters are, in the context we're talking about today, are people who target properties where nobody is home. The properties have not been abandoned in most cases, but the person might not be home. Heidi Peterson. And we started It's My House actually with Heidi Peterson. Our first broadcast, not podcast, but our first broadcast was out of a station. I forgot which one, out of Detroit. So we It's My House started with Heidi Peterson, and she's in our archives with some, I think, at least one, if not two podcasts within the first year of It's My House. But she had bought a mini mansion in Detroit. Anyway, she was in Russia. While she was in Russia, this lady, Tracy, whatever, the missionary, moved in to her house and created liens on her house. It's rampant from coast to coast. In any event, you heard another podcast where squatters ran up a water bill. All right, so, and these squatters typically have an entitlement attitude. They feel they have a right if they see a property with nobody home, they can go take over. Now, how does this link up to air mattress billionaires? Well, and even reparations. Well, the next audio I'm going to play will give you the backstory of Airbnb, which was originally named AirBedAndBreakfast.com. Two guys in San Francisco, and this was in 2007, two guys in San Francisco, they were behind on their rent. And I think they were paying over $1,000 a month in rent. And they needed to come up with some money or they were going to get evicted. Now, people who typically lack an innovative mindset or creative imagination, that's where you'll find the squatters. They'll either break in or they'll create some code of building violations, or if they can, take you to legal aid or sue you in court or something like that, to buy them time where they can stay in your place for free while they get themselves together and find a new place to live. Well, these two guys, eventually it was three, but it started with two. They came up with a very, very simple but innovative idea on how to make up their back rent. they decided to get some air mattresses. And if you're on, go to Amazon, type in air mattresses, see what comes back, see how much they cost. On our scrolling marquee on It's My House Today on Blog Talk Radio, we got a scrolling marquee of, you know, what a couple of them look like. They got three air mattresses. Once again, they're behind on their rent, facing eviction. And they put together a real quick website and advertised their three air mattresses for rent. In San Francisco, which is between Atlanta and Honolulu, Hawaii, flip-flopping between that's the most expensive housing market in the United States. They got three takers. That was the beginning of Airbnb. Those two gentlemen, along with a third person, are now billionaires in a privately held company. Here's more of the backstory.
How Airbnb started, or how three guys went from renting air mattresses to a $10 billion company. Two guys in San Francisco couldn't pay rent. So they thought, why not rent out three air mattresses? They made a simple website, a blog with maps. Two men and a woman showed up paying $80 each. After guests left, they thought, this could be a big idea. They invited a former roommate, Nathan, as a co-founder to build the site. Then they launched at South by Southwest and got two bookings.
Brian, I hope it's not the only idea you're working on.
So in 2008, they sold Obama O's cereal right before the election for $40 a box. They got their first money, $30,000. In 2009, they got $20,000 in first funding from Paul Graham's Y Combinator. They were making $200 a week for months, not growing much. Finally, they realized photos of places were not so pretty. So they went door to door in New York City and took photos by hand of listed houses. 1 week later, they were making $400 a week. Finally, they started growing. But they were still rejected by a famous VC in New York City, Fred Wilson. Then Barry Manilow's drummer rented out an entire house. Aha, they thought. Then they raised $600,000 in seed rounds from Sequoia Capital. 2010, they raised $7.2 million. 2011, $112 million from many investors, including Ashton Kutcher. And finally, 2014, Airbnb is valued at $10 billion. Now, don't you tell me you can't do a startup.
All right, now let's go to Amazon real quick. We're going to play one more audio, then we're going to go to Darlene Lewis. Let's go to Amazon for those of you who are online right now. And when you get to Amazon, I want you to punch in air mattresses. And we don't know whether they bought the air mattresses or they borrowed them, because they were broke and behind on rent and facing eviction. But I'm looking at some air mattresses on Amazon. The first one I see is $119.95. Here's one for $59. Here's another one that you can buy anywhere from $27 to $64.36. Here's another one for $42, another one for $69, Here's one for $23, one for $36 or $56, and here's one for $29, $51, $52, $36, $68, $28, excuse me, $29 and 29 cents, I mean 49 cents, $44, $94, $52, $14, now these are for kids though, $14.05, $14.99 or $49.99. You can go to Walmart, probably go to CVS. There's a number of places of where you can get an air mattress. But what I like about what these guys did is they didn't try to hold any landlord hostage. They didn't destroy, they didn't stop up the toilet. I'm speaking as a landlord because I've had this happen to me. Tenants stop up the toilet when they can't pay the rent. Some of them break stuff when they can't pay the rent. And then they call housing after they created the code violation. But these guys didn't do that. Like I said, I don't know whether they bought the air mattresses because they were broke and behind on their rent. Facing eviction. But instead of going to neighborhood legal services, instead of calling some government agency, instead of trying to find out some entitlement program, these guys got creative and innovative and got hold of, I don't know whether they bought the mattresses or they borrowed the mattresses or a combination of the two. They had absolutely nothing to lose. Put an ad out on the internet and got their first three customers. And kept on doing it. They made up their back rent. We're going to listen to, we have Darlene Lewis who's coming up soon. This is the last audio we're going to play. We're going to listen to one of the founders of Airbnb and hear it directly from his mouth.
Hello, friends. This week, the topic is Airbnb, and we're going to look at how important it is to be early. Early to connect with your customers, number one, and also early to get help and mentorship along the way, and perhaps even consider joining an incubator, and we're going to show you how that worked out for Airbnb. Airbnb, who are they? Well, if you're around the world, you should be familiar with them. They connect people that have a room, an apartment, or even a home to rent with people that want to rent those things for a short time. They make a little bit in the middle, a little bit off the person renting their room, and they make a cut of the transaction of the person paying for the room or the home. That's how they make their money, and they are a global phenomena and amazing levels of valuation that I'm going to take you through. A record-setting startup to establish global company. Let's go back and look at where it all started back in 2007. This is the story of this company starting in 2007, and who would know that 10 years later they would have raised over $4.1 billion, and they're out there propagating a marketing and branding message that promotes a sense of belonging and a sense of being. Very interesting the way they've done that. So it all starts with a gentleman named Brian Chesky and his friend Joe Gebbia. And they had come from New York and they were living in San Francisco, and like most aspiring entrepreneurs, they were broke. And they were looking at money being tight, and they're saying, gosh, we got to pay our rent, we got to live, while they're trying to figure life out. And they were looking for a way to earn some extra cash. And they noticed that all the hotel rooms seemed booked up in San Francisco every time there was a conference. And there was an industrial design conference coming to town, and it had once again booked everything up. And they said, listen, what if we put up a fast website called Airbed and Breakfast? And we'll get a couple inflatable airbeds, you know, air mattresses with a sleeping bag or a blanket, and we'll sell people the opportunity to sleep in our living room here in our flat. And they're like, seriously? Yeah, let's try it. So they bought some air mattresses and some other materials and set it up and put a quick website up simply called the Airbed and Breakfast. Kind of a takeoff on bed and breakfast, but it was an airbed. And they priced it at $80. And on that website, the week of the Industrial Design Conference, they got three visitors. That was it. It was a gentleman from India. It was a woman about 35 or 40 years old, and a guy from Utah. So it was a random set of people, but they weren't 20-somethings just looking for a crash pad like you're hiking across Europe looking for a youth hostel. These were people that were professionals, over 30 years old, looking for a place to crash, and so they paid $80 each. So they said, wow, that's really great. And right about after the time that happened, they had found themselves a Harvard graduate who was be a tremendous architect for the technical side of the site and the systems that are behind it to connect the people that want to rent a room with people that have a room to rent. And his name is Nathan Blacharczyk. And now they got the three guys that would become the trio of founders of Airbnb, Brian Chesky, Joe Gebbia, and Nathan Blacharczyk. And they would make history. So they went off to South by Southwest. I don't know if you know what that is. That's an incredible conference. It's in Austin, Texas every year. Started out as a music conference, but now there's interactive and education. There's a bunch of different topics that are there. So they headed down there because there's a lot of startups down there. There's a lot of venture capital people. They head to Austin. They set up shop. They announce that Air Bed and Breakfast is up there and going strong, and they get two bookings. One, two. That's it. And they're thinking, oh, no, this is not working. We've come all the way down to South by Southwest. And they said, well, let's take another stab at it. So there's an important thing to learn here. They were committed to their original concept, and they kept at it for as long as they had resources. And the next thing that was coming up was in Denver, and it was the Democratic National Convention in 2008. And this is where Obama spoke, where the world and the U.S. saw him coronated as the Democratic nominee for president. Happened in Denver. And they're like, well, we'll get a bunch of places out there and people will be able to stay there cheap because the whole world and media and press and everybody are convening in Denver and converging on Denver, and there's going to be a shortage of hotel rooms. Let's see if we could do it there. So they set up shop and they gave notice out to 900 delegates, and they sent them the notifications. They did everything they could to let them know, and they got 50 reservations. Which is better, but it was still not nearly enough. Along the way, you may have remembered this little news bit that went kind of viral. And they had cereal, Obama O's and Captain McCain's. The cereal was branded for the two candidates running in the United States presidential election, John McCain and Barack Obama, who would win and become president, of course. Well, they made $30,000 taking cereal that was made by cereal companies, but putting in boxes branded for the candidates. So they made $30,000 to put a couple bucks in the pocket and make up for the fact that they had booked a whopping 50 reservations there at the Democratic National Convention. Well, at that time, they were just suffering. Their weekly revenue at that time was $200. That's not going to cut it. That doesn't even pay for your servers or anything. So these guys are starving to death. They make 30 grand on the cereal with the presidential election, and they go on and said, hey, maybe let's try the inauguration. So I'm going to stop right here and give you a bonus point for this week.
Bonus point.
And it is random event success is not a path to sustainable success. And I'm sure Paul's going to put a little graphic up there for that. But here's my point. You put up a website, and you're doing videos for something, you have a viral video. That's one viral video. Sustainable success is building a repeatable customer base. And right now, Airbnb did not have a repeatable customer base. But nonetheless, they said, well, we did okay. You know, if 50 reservations is okay, let's head to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration. Because the press and the media and people are going to be converging in Washington, D.C. to see Obama sworn in as president. And, you know, let's put up shop there. Well, they did a little better. They got 150 bookings. And they went back to San Francisco. And they're on the brink of being shut down. What did they do? They had a chance meeting with Paul Graham, who is the founder and entrepreneur behind the Y Combinator Incubator. It was an incubator where you could get some money, you could get mentorship from people, and more importantly, it was a three-month, four-month intensive program that ended with what's called Demo Day, where you would present what you've been working on in incubating and improving with all this great mentorship. You would present it to venture capitalists to see people go, maybe give you your first round of capital. So they did that. And in the winter, January of 2009, they get into the Y Combinator incubator. And so they're often, you know, learning and things like that. And they had about $20,000 budget to work with during that little phase there, just a few months at the incubator. And they went with a new and different logo, which one you may recognize right here. This became the Airbnb logo, as good as I can draw it for you there. And at the end of it, something happened. A VC from Sequoia said on demo day, I think there's something here. And they gave them $600,000 in seed capital. So now they had mentorship, they had refined their idea, and they had the trust and belief of Sequoia Capital. And as very interesting, Brian Chesky at that time would say, this was the most important 3 months in the company's history. Well, let's take a look at that. When I, at the beginning of this video, talked about being early. But be early about getting mentors. Get mentors right out of the gate. Find people that know what they're doing and mentorship. And if you're in a town or a city that's got a startup environment, get involved in that environment. Or find an incubator and see if you can apply for admission so that your idea is good enough to get you in the door where you'll get a little bit of money, you get resources like servers and bandwidth, but more importantly, you'll get mentorship from people that have walked that path before. And that's exactly what happened here, and it led to them getting $600,000 in seed. They also talked to the legendary venture capitalist, Fred Wilson. He's a great guy. He's done a lot of great investments. But as they say, even Babe Ruth struck out from time to time. And he said, this problem of connecting spare rooms and people is a bitch, and you won't solve it, and it's going to kill you. Well, Fred was wrong, but he's been right about many, many other things. But it's always a badge of honor for startups to actually be able to say, this guy was wrong, but we still made it anyway. And nonetheless, I think Fred nowadays will tell you, hey, you win some, you lose some, you're right, you're wrong, and he moved on and they moved on. So the boys, our trio, heads to New York and they start talking to people. One of those points I brought up, get close to your customers. They start talking to people that they call the hosts, the people that are renting out the rooms. They start talking to people who are the guests that were renting, asking them questions back and forth. And what they discovered was a lot of the pictures taken by hosts, people maybe like you and me that got a room to rent, were terrible. So they said, look, this is all part of the branding and marketing. Why would someone say, yeah, I want to stay there for one night in New York if it doesn't look good? And so they put a program in place where they sent a professional photographer out to take quick pictures of these locations. And guess what? They immediately noticed that those that they had the better pictures of, over a one-week time frame, were being rented 2 times to 3 times more often as the others. So there you have it, getting close to the customer, which is the host and the guest, and refining your marketing with something that they learned at the incubator, and they were iterating very, very fast. And before you know it, they were suddenly at $400 a week, and they were growing. A big hit happened when Barry Manilow's drummer rented an entire house. Now, if you don't know anything about Barry Manilow, he was a kind of a pop star in the 70s and 80s in the United States. And the word Manilow is Swedish, which really means man is lame. I'm going with that, and don't send me any notes on it. That's what I'm going with. And if you've ever listened to Barry Manilow's music, been tortured in that way, you'll know man is lame. Nonetheless, his drummer, of all people, rents an entire house, and that's like an aha moment. And the company is starting to grow. An interesting thing happens. That was an inflection point during that time period, and they went out in 2010, so within 1 year, and they raised $7.2 million in a round from Sequoia again joining and Greylock. Well, now they're pretty sure that they've got a pretty good hit on their hands. So let's talk about the challenges that happen and what the amazing growth statistically and valuation-wise. So they, at the time of that, were well on their way, and a year later in 2011, check this out, they hit their 1 millionth booking. This white line here is the bookings. And they raised $112 million in a Series B from Andreessen Horowitz, you know, Mark Andreessen, the founder of Netscape, one of the first browsers way back. Well, $112 million from him and others, it's a $1 billion valuation. Let's take a quick reflection back. 2 years prior, they were getting into the incubator because they had almost died, $200 a week, selling cereal at the Democratic National Convention. And look at that. 2 years later, $1 billion valuation, and Andreessen Horowitz, Sequoia, and Greylock, pillars of the venture capital community, are in this deal. Fantastic. It's now what we call a unicorn.
Tom's word of the day.
Startups that get a valuation of $1 billion are called unicorns. And this unicorn was not based on eyeballs, like early Twitter, or users, like early Instagram. It was based on money. It had a business model. I want to rent a room. You want to rent that room from me. They take a cut of both. It was a business model. So from the beginning, they were making revenue, and they were making profits. We go driving down, and about this time, you know, came their first controversy, and they got over their first controversy, and that was, it was bound to happen. Somebody comes home and she finds her entire house trashed and everything stolen, cleaned out. Well, as a young company, sometimes you know what to do, sometimes you don't. And at this time, they refused to help. You know, you rented this at your own risk. The publicity and backlash was terrible, and they finally came out and said, wait, we will help you. We didn't do it. Right, but we weren't a cause of this, but we get it. We got to put something in place. So they launched a $50,000 insurance program for people that were the hosts, that were renting. And they also reached back out to the woman that had all that stuff happen, and they helped her out a little bit and worked with her. There was another incident where somebody rented their place out, and they came back in to find all kinds of drug paraphernalia, meth pipes, and some other things that were left there. So people obviously rented it to get together with a group of people and have a party and get seriously high on some really dangerous drugs. So nonetheless, there was some protection that put in place. And before long, you know, this $112 million has carried them, and they have their 5 millionth booking. And what was very interesting, right here at the end of 2012, they had sold that year more nights than Hilton. More nights than Hilton. A three-year-old company sells more nights than Hilton, one room at a time. There is only one word for that, and that is damn! That's amazing! And suddenly they were doing more per night, you know, rentals than Hilton was. That's incredible. Well, they continued to expand. They continued to drive forward. And in 2013, they raised $200 million in their Series C, and that involved Founders Fund. Peter Thiel, somebody who I have incredible respect for and admiration, in the book Zero to One. If you haven't read that, I've mentioned it in some of my other case studies on here. Go get a copy of that book and make sure you take notes in it, you put bookmarks in it, and it stays on your shelf because it's exactly what you need at the beginning. And if you can get into an incubator along the way, so much the better. But now Peter Thiel's in the deal. Founders Fund is in the deal. And they're headed toward $10 million in bookings. Just a short time later, you know, 1 year later, they suddenly raised $500 million in a Series D at a $10 billion valuation. So now their valuation is in the double-digit billion club. And along the way, another controversy was, you may have seen this in the media if you've studied Airbnb. A New Yorker was fined $2,400 for allowing people to stay in his apartment. And they were calling it unlicensed rental business or things like that. But Airbnb jumped in and they said, time out. We're going to help defend this guy and we're going to help pay his legal fees because we don't like that law that doesn't allow people like you and me just to rent a room out. I mean, good grief. I rented a room from relatives when I was in college, and I was a relative, and I paid $300 a month and, you know, had room and board. Well, why not get $50 for somebody staying in an extra bedroom? And in many ways, the New York law is wrong-headed. But nonetheless, Airbnb jumped in because that's the kind of legislation that can get in the middle of you. Go watch the case study I did on Uber and see how they dealt with legislation and governments and trying to stop the hand of capitalism and startups. There's some great points in that one as well. So here we go, the $10 billion club here. And moving on, and in 2014, they changed their logo, and that was also controversial because many people thought that this logo was could be interpreted a lot of ways in sort of a female interpretation way. And they thought it was, do you think that's really a good logo and good taste? It's a little too suggestive. But nonetheless, they went with it, and the controversy just kind of washed ashore and then washed back out to sea. as they were continuing to grow and cross 10 billion, excuse me, 10 billion. I have a B there. Paul, look at this. I have a B. 5 million bookings, 10 billion bookings. That would be 1.1 booking for every person on Earth. And you know what that would be? Damn, a lot of bookings. But that's a mistake. That should be 10 million. So I'm going to spend that right there. So 10 million bookings. So in the middle of doing a case study, I discover an error. But anyway, they go from 1 to 5 to 10 million bookings. Now you can see that things are just crazy and just going very, very well. They're raising money. They're expanding internationally. And along the way here, they also expanded that insurance program from $50,000 to $1 million. Again, doing the right thing, trying to set things up so you and I can feel confident about renting out our home or a room in our apartment or our flat. So we move forward here to 2015, and they raise $1.5 billion from General Atlantic, Hill House Capital, and the great Kleiner Perkins. So now they are, Series E is in the bank, and the valuation is now $25 billion. And then $850 million in middle of 2016 from Capital G, which is Google Capital, and that's how they go, that's their new branding, Capital G. So now you even have Google in the game. So if you think about search and search technology and finding places to stay, now you've got the biggest search company in the world on your board and with big skin in the game, and so you're ready to go to the next level. And at this time, it's worth noting that their $30 billion valuation, that compares favorably with Hilton, who's worth $28 billion enterprise valuation. So now these guys are worth as much as Hilton. Amazing stuff. So what's next as they're sitting here? Well, there's a couple things. There's still challenges in the regulatory environment. As a matter of fact, not too long ago, Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York trying to put another bill in place, trying to put fines on Airbnb hosts if they do certain things. And so they're having to fight the regulatory battle. They've also got something coming, a thing called experiences, where maybe a local person, as you use Airbnb to stay in New York, a local person could give you a tour of the neighborhood and maybe some of the more interesting sites. So extending the way that people like you and me could use our room that we rent and our local knowledge to make a little bit of money. And more recently, they just closed in February 2017, they bought Luxury Retreats, which is out of Canada, had two rounds, $16 million from Inovia Capital. Here's a little lesson for you. Inovia, over just about, I think it was 2 to 3 years, Luxury Retreats was renting villas all around the world. And now they're talking about using the Airbnb engine to be a way to connect people that want to rent those villas with the owners or the host of those villas. So two rounds of capital over just a couple years from Inovia Capital, and they get bought for $200 million by Airbnb. So they use some of this $850 million to go make an acquisition of a high-end company that had a ton of listings on villas. So here's another investment lesson. For those of you scoring at home, Inovia Capital, it put in 16, 200 comes out. That's about a 10x return. So they made 10x. So again, for those of you scoring at home, trying to figure this out, Inovia Capital, invest 16 and probably got 10x back. That's pretty amazing. And for those of you not scoring at home, get on Airbnb, rent a room, and then download Tinder. Maybe that'll help you. Airbnb, the second most valuable private company in the U.S. venture scene, second only to Uber, making money with an estimate, just came out, this amazing estimate, that in 2020, people believe these guys could have $2 to $3 billion in profits in just a few years. Amazing things. So as we look at it, get connected to your customers early the way they did in New York and taking pictures and improving it. And get connected to mentorship early. And if you've got an opportunity to take your idea and to pitch it to an incubator to get in for a 90-day program or something, you go do that, because what you'll learn and a little bit of capital, it's just amazing. That's this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Please subscribe to Valuetainment for more case studies by the BizDoc and the best content on the internet for entrepreneurs. Until next time, I'm Tom Ellsworth, and I hope I left you better than I found you.
All right. Now, if you're not pumped up behind hearing that, Air Mattresses, Air Mattress Billionaires with reparations, you know, for the reparations crowd, come on. While you're waiting on the government, and you might not live long enough to see it coming from the government or any government, once again, they did something that anybody can do. Three air mattresses. If that's not an American success story, I don't know what it is. So regardless of your station in life, and you can get in on this opportunity to Airbnb and the other platforms besides Airbnb, but innovation and creativity go a long, long way. Now let's go to a person who has been innovative and helped other people be innovative and creative, Darlene Lewis. And good morning, Darlene.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Well, what did you think about the Air Mattress Billionaire story?
I thought that was a wonderful story. That should motivate anyone to take their ideas and go forward with them. I enjoyed that very much.
Good. Now, you have a story. Tell us the name of your business and how that got started, because that was, I mean, just like these guys, they didn't plan on starting a business. It just turned out that way. But you didn't plan on starting a business, but tell us how that started and turned into a business.
Okay, the name of my organization is Lewis Burnett Employment Finders. We are a ministry. What I do here is I help individuals with a felony background or those in the court system find full-time and permanent jobs, and I also offer other skills, other things for the individuals that's coming through my office that's in need. We, as I said earlier, we are a ministry, and we've been around for 32 years. I'll be celebrating my 33rd year in July. July will be 33 years for us, and we have a good program. We offer a lot of services here at this program. We offer pre-employment training classes. We offer life skill classes, basic computer training classes, GED preparation, drug and alcohol, basic 12-step program. We also help individuals with their credit. We do entrepreneur classes and community service, and we teach them how to write an effective resume. And the services here is absolutely free. You know, to go to a 12-step program, it's about $150 a week, and you have to do a lot of classes if you order through the court. They can go through the classes here absolutely free, and it is honored by the court system.
Good.
As I was saying, our programs are much needed, because there's a lot of individuals coming out of prison, and they're going back because they cannot find employment. It's hard for them to find something, find a job. Nobody wants to hire them because of their background. But with the companies I work for, they're willing to give them a chance.
Now, Darlene, let me ask you this. Now, we had a guy on last week, Mr. C. He'll be back probably next week. And then I got another friend of mine. They're hosts to the Airbnb concept of which is known as peer-to-peer lodging, which is part of the sharing economy. Basically, because you don't have to own any real estate, But they have people that can train people that are a little bit entrepreneurial on how to be hosts. So the Airbnb opportunity might be, well, not might be, for those who are interested, would be a good way for people that find it hard to get employment because of their back, you know, legal background. I mean, what's your thoughts on that, from what you heard?
I think from what I've heard that would be a great idea because, you know, when they're coming out of prison, most of them have the skills that it takes to build a house from the ground up. Mm-hmm. They already have the construction skills, the bricklaying skills, and they have the knowledge and the know-how. They can read the blueprint. And I had a guy come through here that said he helped to build the penitentiary in Brickey, Arkansas. So they have a lot of skills. So I would think it would be a wonderful thing.
Well, now, as a host or a hostess, you don't even have to have those skills that you just mentioned. It's basically if you can, because to a large degree, it's the hospitality thing. In other words, make sure that a person is checked in to a particular location, make sure they got everything they need, wherever they're lodging at. And then in some cases, you might not even see these people. So things like that. Now, your organization needs some funding. Could you share that with us and how people can donate?
Okay, yes. We are doing a fundraiser this month where we are trying to get help in continuing Lewis Burnett to where it will cost not so much that I'm having to pay everything. We are asking individuals if they believe in this program and they can research us and they can find out what they want to find out. And they can help us out by giving us a small donation. Now, you can donate in two ways. They can do it through just sending it through the mail or through the Cash App. The Cash App is very easy, and it can be sent through the Cash App. It can also be, you can also send it in the mail in the address to send it to would be 7101 West 12th Street in Little Rock, Arkansas. And also, I wanted to introduce the person that's online. I brought it through. She's also doing something similar in the Virgin Islands. And her name is Kimberly. Miss Kimberly, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And I am totally excited that they're talking about Airbnb. That's what I've done for the past 4.5 years. So training our new people, training the people with the felony background, I like what this gentleman is saying because it is so easy to do if you've got the right training and you rise really fast, as I did in the Airbnb community. So that I think he's spot on with that being a skill set we can offer them because that's what I've spent my life doing for 4.5 years. So thanks, darling, for the opportunity to listen. And everyone who's listening in, I'm Kimberly Rodriguez. And, of course, you know, 4.5 years in the Airbnb industry, owning properties, but also hosting and rising quickly within 6 months to super host. So I would be just delighted to pass that skill on to our people with felony background and actually to look at Airbnb and giving us some support to train people. Basically, the extensions of Airbnb and that community. So I think we've got the best of both worlds here, darling. I'm excited about this.
Well,
yes,
you got me pumped up. You got me
Kimberly
pumped
and
up
I work together. She's super awesome.
Yeah, because I mean, like with a felony background, this is something that, I mean, if you're, like, see, you don't even have to be a, you don't have to learn how to build nothing like that, but just be a host. Matter of fact, could you share with us a little bit about what hosting, I mean, is on Airbnb?
Absolutely. Did you say, you would like me to share?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Basically, I got into this by wanting to just rent out extra rooms in my home. The training process, once I was vetted, obviously you get background checked and vetted, and you have to get your permit if you're a property owner. If you're not a property owner and someone who just wants to be a host, your basic day would involve, as your guests are checking in, you greet them at the door. So basically all you have to have is a great personality. And you'll have a great personality because of the type of money that you're making from the Airbnb host. They pay you very well. And what happens with your guests, you make sure that beforehand you show up 30 minutes to an hour early, make sure the house is clean, make sure they have all the supplies that are on the checklist, and you can greet them at the door. I enjoy doing that because I show them around the home. It's more personal. You don't have to. You can actually give them the code to get in and then just communicate by telephone if you don't have a car and you're not able to actually get to the site. But if you do have transportation and you can get to the home or the place that's being rented, it's better. You walk them around, you answer any questions they have, you offer up any suggestions about transportation or things to do. And then once during their stay, if it's every 3 days, you want to check in on them and say, how's it going? Are you happy? Do you need anything? Usually they say no. And then if they're just staying the weekend, you check in on the second day. Are you doing okay? How's it going? Do you need anything? And they say no. If they say yes, then you provide whatever it is that is within the guidelines on the checklist that they have agreed to. You provide it, either you get it sent over. I've been out of town and ordered things on Amazon, had them delivered to the client. They were overjoyed with that. When it's time for the client to check out, you let them check out. You check in with them an hour after checkout. How was it? I hope it was good. Please come again. And then you write a review of your experience once you go back to the home to check and see how they treated the house and what type of condition it was in, which is usually good. You evaluate them. You just write up a little paragraph. Johnny Joe and his family were great. They left the house in good condition. We enjoyed and hope they come again. And then their guests, when they get back home, they'll rate you as a host or hostess. And usually it's always good if you've been in contact with them because you understand what they needed, if they needed anything, and there's a personal touch. After that cycle, they rate you, it's over. That's it. And then you go on to the next thing, the next next set of people. And it's awesome because you even, when the cleaning crew comes, you have a relationship with them. They communicate with you. You communicate with them. Tell them certain things need to be done. If guests, were a little messy, you can communicate that with them, coordinate. They clean up, and you prepare for your next guest, and that's it.
So, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah. And then you do, and you make very good money, and it's something that you can do as a person who has, a background, a record that's not so savory. It's okay because you're just, you're hosting. And I think that's a way to get people's appetite. Because eventually you will want to own a property. And you can host more than one property. That's the other thing. I had three at a time, and that was what I was hosting. So it kept me busy, well paid, but yet it was not hard work. It was enjoyable.
So well, it sounds like you can put on a workshop, because I've a couple of friends I know that do it. I was telling them although a lot of people prefer Airbnb, but they can conduct workshops or retreats on basically how, step by step on how to do it. Can create many opportunities. I mean, they can clean, they can be the host. I'm looking at it multifaceted, so I'm impressed by it. Well, look, people that are listening, Darlene, give your information, because any money that you donate to Darlene's organization can help get people started with something like this. So, Darlene, give your information again.
Again, my name, again, it's Darlene Lewis, and the address is 7101 West Hope Street, Little Rock, Arkansas, 72204. Or you could just go on Cash App, and you can do it through Cash App by using my phone number. And my phone number and my name, and it's 501-413-2126. All donations is greatly appreciated, and it's much needed now. We are getting more and more individuals that's coming through the office and needing the services, and that includes housing. We're having to do a lot more in finding jobs to go to these companies, convince more companies to allow us to put individuals in their organization. So the it's really a lot more, and we're getting a lot more individuals. We're doing from 25 to 30 individuals a day. So that adds up. Now we have closed the office down on Friday because we have so much paperwork to do. But we are really in need of your assistance. So anyone that could help, we would greatly appreciate it. Now, I understand okay. that you have agreed to give us $100.
Yep, I'm going to spend $100 myself.
If someone could match that, that would be great. And that $100 is going to help quite a few individuals. And Ms. Kim has helped us. Ms. Kim Lee, she has helped this organization greatly as well.
Now, also, people, Darlene and Kim Lee, you can do this too. We have a Facebook page, and its Facebook page is titled E-Commerceville. That's one word, e-commerce, and then Ville, V-I-L-L-E. One word, e-commerceville. E-commerce social network. If you go to our page on Facebook, once again, which is e-commerceville, and then join that, and then people can get in contact with you directly that way as well.
Okay.
All right.
Spell that out for me.
Yeah, all right, E, the letter E, then commerce, C-O-M-M-E-R-C-E, and then Ville, V-I-L-L-E, but it's one word, E-commerce.
Oh, it's just one word.
Yeah, one word.
I'm going to look
that
up today.
Yeah, it's the name was coined by, and it's an actual physical location, okay. The name was coined by my executive producer, Robin Lynn Maben. And she came up with the name, but it's physically located on 4 acres that I have in the northern part of the state of Florida. So, and we plan on setting that up as a retreat. And an educational retreat. So but it is a physical location for people that if you want to come to Florida, I'll take it. It's four acres and it's wooded because I wanted it secluded. But e-commerceville, because like what Kimlin gave an example of, is we're trying to get people interested in e-commerce. All right.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, Airbnb to a high degree runs off of e-commerce, and we
yes.
can send money to Darlene
yes.
and her organization with Cash
yes.
App is e-commerce. You know, Airbnb
yes.
is e-commerce. So that's where
yes.
it's at. You know, that's where it's at these days.
Yes,
and
is.
A lot of people are getting left behind because they haven't adjusted to or become receptive to e-commerce. No, not everything's e-commerce,
right.
but a lot is. A lot is. So that's why we set up that page. So you two go there, and then people can get in touch with you that way, including myself. Let me bring on, because we got, let's see, Robin. I think it's Robin's birthday, too. Robin, you there?
I'm here. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Robin.
Hello.
All right, any feedback, Robin, and happy birthday, Robin.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
Today is my son's birthday as well.
Okay, happy birthday to us.
My son, he's 51 years old today.
I'm 57 today.
37, looking 37, or 27.
Yeah.
So, Robin, any feedback? Any comments?
You're 100% correct about e-commerce. Everything is going digital. Even the appliances in our homes, even our homes are becoming smart. So I know that there may be some health risks and health concerns, you know, with the magnetic exposure and things like that. But overall, if you're not connected digitally, you're kind of going to get left behind. And not just left behind, but you won't be able to spend money. You won't be able to adjust to be able to buy the things that you need, even to pay the bills on your home. Everything is going digital. So I just encourage those that are reluctant or they don't know, then get with your students and children and grandchildren and have them show you. And then younger people, let's when we see the older people struggling with the technology, let's take the time out to sit down and help them out. Yeah, that's all I have to say.
Okay, then Pleasant, we got a Pleasant in Chicago, Pleasant 7. If you want to chime in, press 1. Blog Talk is up. Yesterday, we had the Gremlins up in here.
They were bouncing around yesterday.
Yeah, but we kicked the Gremlins out, so we've been good all day today. Pleasant Stephens out of Chicago.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Glad to hear your voices this morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, you better stay with the program, because if she just stated, she'll be left behind. My wife just made me buy a new computer. She said my old computer was old and dilapidated, so we should be receiving that by the end of the week. Yeah.
All right, you know, is it coming by Amazon? I get Amazon comes a month about twice a month. I'm looking around to buy Amazon boxes. I got to fill them up. But it's a digital age, no question about it. And like Darlene, like I said, Darlene's they're doing a fundraiser this week, so if people can give any parts of whatever. I'm donating $100, and I was going to send it in, but I'll probably do a Cash App. Because that's an easy thing to do. And but Pleasant, you have a program on tonight. Give us the name of it and what time.
Strictly Business comes on at 7:30 p.m. 5 days a week when we can get on the air. Last night we couldn't get on because of whatever was going on with the sources. And it's, oh my goodness, L.A., let me get my thing over here to give you the number to call in is the number to call in to the show.
I got a Pleasant. It's 516. Okay. Yeah, 516-387-1512. Once again, Strictly Business at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, is 516-387-1512.
You said 1512?
Yeah, 1512.
Yeah. Okay, I got that.
All right.
And what
day
is this?
Monday through Friday.
You know, I got a question I want to ask.
Kimberly, I'd like to have you on one day at your convenience, you know, to promote what you do, because I know that's connected to what Darlene does, which I'll be making my trip sooner. I don't know when I'll make it, but it'll be this year, to Arkansas myself.
Okay.
Because I've interviewed Darlene about three times. And I'm just fascinated with the whole thing, particularly the marketing of it. Or how it started, because it started with something simple, and that's why I like it. You know, with this Airbnb story, how they started. The people at Airbnb, they were just trying to make some rent money. Okay, Darlene was just basically trying to help her son out. That was it.
Yes.
But then it morphed into something big.
Yes.
Go ahead, Darlene. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ben.
Oh, I was just going to say, I met Miss Kim on Facebook, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful meeting ever since then. I will be traveling to the Virgin Islands, and I'm looking so forward to that when Miss Kim gets back home so we can get that business.
Now, is that the American Virgin Islands or the British Virgin Islands?
American, U.S. Virgin Islands, St. Croix, St. John, and St. Thomas, U.S.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
All right.
And,
well, either way is good. Yeah, either way is good. You can't go wrong with this house.
You really can't. You really can't. And, oh, but I will be delighted to be on the program. I'm excited because you gave me a wonderful idea to bring with the organization with Darlene, another facet of helping people become entrepreneurs.
That is correct.
Yeah, so that's another service we can offer, and even doing the workshops for people in general as a fundraiser for the recidivism program that Darlene has and that I'm going to implement in the Virgin Islands. So this thing is, you're right, it started out because I had a huge house and it was just me and my two kids. And I was like, we have all these rooms, let's rent them out. And that's how it started. I was just trying to ease my pain with the big mortgage, and it just morphed into a whole business. So,
you know,
I would love
speaking
to
of which,
anytime.
You said big mortgage. We had a guy on here last week. We call him Mr. C. He paid off a house. It was over $60,000. Of the mortgage that was left on it, the house was. He paid off a whole house via Airbnb in 2 years.
Yes. Yes, I believe it. That my first year of doing Airbnb, I made $65,000. My first year, and I was featured in the Tennessean newspaper as a super host and a person who's on top of a happening trend back a couple years ago. So if he paid off his mortgage, I can vouch for him. But that actually did happen. And so you can kind of tell why I'm so geeked and so excited about it, because there's money there. It's honest money. And you learn. You learn a bit.
I see. All right, so everybody, Darlene, give your information one more time because it's needed, and it's helping people. That $100 is going to multiply. She'll multiply these people.
Okay, then. My information again, my name is Darlene Lewis. I live in Little Rock, Arkansas. The address is 7101 West 12th Street, Suite 300B. Little Rock, Arkansas, 72204. That, again, the address is 7101 West 12th Street, Suite 300B. Little Rock, Arkansas. If you don't want to do all of that, you can just go to the Cash App. The Cash App is real easy. You just type in my name and my phone number, and that's all you have to do. So it's real easy on the Cash App.
Okay, now people, go ahead, Garland.
That's all I was going to say. I was just going to tell them how needed this is. I'm in a smaller building. I need a bigger space because, you know, when I get a bunch of folks in here, it's very difficult when you got a lot of people. Nobody's here this morning because my door is locked, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to do this and take care of clients. Most of the time, I'm here alone. And I work the individuals, you know, alone. So it is so needed. So we can get a larger space and take care of the bills here. We're asking for your help, if you would send whatever you can. We appreciate that.
Okay, now, darling, you can also, Kimberly, too, go to the Facebook page, our Facebook page, E-Commerceville, which that is only one name on the whole of Facebook like that, and put your information, including the Cash App, and people read that, too, that don't listen to the live stream, because this all shows are recorded and archived, but that will be, you know, whenever they want to around the clock. Pleasant, anything you want to put out there, Pleasant?
No, everything is coming along very, very well. I'm trying to recover from my party on last Saturday night.
Okay, Kimberly, since the Virgin Islands is a good place to vacation, you want to give anything to promote?
I'm sorry. Something just like a
I said, for those people that are looking for a vacation spot in the Virgin Islands, you want to promote anything?
Yes. Yeah, well, I would say the entire island. It's really probably more than anything, maybe the French and Greece is a wonderful thing. I'll definitely, if you need more information, if they want to send the inquiries, because we do have amazing Airbnbs over there to stay in, and they are being booked, but they are very reasonable. So if you want to send your request to the address with Darlene, or you can send it to KimberlyCompany@yahoo.com, and then just ask how the properties are, and I can give you some details and good places to stay at a great price. So you could also do KimberlyCompany@gmail.com. Just send a request. I have this amount of people. I want to come in for these dates. What's available? And then I can come back. There's a lot of people in the phone. I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second. Okay, there it is. As we get the people with the felony backgrounds more involved, it's going to help us get caught. I'm so sorry. But the point of the matter is, contact me. If you contact me about the Airbnbs, if you contact me, Darlene, you're going to be putting some very needy, worthy people who are getting a second chance at a career or at a business. So please contact us. Either you can donate to the organization, or contact me about staying at an Airbnb so we can employ these people to help out when you get to the island. So KimberlyCompany@gmail.com. And thank you.
And we're going to put that information on your Facebook page, Economy Village.
E-Commerceville.
E-Commerceville. I got it right down, but I'm just saying it wrong.
No, Robin. Robin, you thought it. You speak better than me, Robin. Robin, break down the name so they can get it phonetically. No, Robin's not. Yeah. Anyway, E-Commerceville. E in commerce, the word commerce, and then Ville, V-I-L-L-E, one word. E-Commerceville.
We got it.
You got it? Okay. Just join
that
page.
We got it.
Okay, and then put the information.
My genetics right might now, not be that come. Good today with this cold I got. Sorry.
Oh, okay. No problem. Robin's up on the West Coast. She's like 3 hours behind us. So, Darlene, if you want to come over here to today's Tuesday, so if you want to promote it every day this week, you know, we can put you on at the beginning of the show, the end of the beginning, so you can, you know, because you don't know when somebody will hear and they want to donate.
Well, I most definitely do, because this is, like I say, it's a great cause, and if we can get people interested or either take a look at all the services that we offer and the program itself.
I just got an idea. Let's do a show on your organization and, you know, the type of jobs that you know people got, get. And I think you said about 30% of them. Become
entrepreneurs. Someone
needs to
put on their microphone.
Yes, we can do that. And Ms. Kim, what are your hours tomorrow?
Tomorrow? I'm in all day. I'll be up from 8:30 to 5:30 tomorrow. So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's do this tomorrow. Let's concentrate on Darlene's organization. And on that note, we're going to end it for today. Thank you, everybody. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.